entertainment listings for February the 3rd.
But every saw it ends with an endless groove. And Ian, what's going down? Well, it is coming up to 5:29. We do have theme music to get through, and it is the theme music, of course, of the Church of the Subgenius. Chat, and now, of course, this half hour. Headed over to you, J.R. Bob Dobbs. Welcome back.
Yeah, I was down in New York.
Yeah, do you want to talk about it at all? I brought it up last week, and your back went up a little bit, and I didn't know whether to explore this or not.
I couldn't.
Do you want to talk a bit about what you're doing in hindsight?
I couldn't explore it ahead of time and give any warning to the pinks and problems that may surface en route, but now that I'm back safe and sound, of course I can get the run through the minutes. Basically, I had to go down and have a little summit meeting with Frank Zappa, playing in New York to a subgenius audience Thursday, Friday, and Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, what is say something? I have some things to say, but do you have anything you want to interject about it first?
Are you going to talk about New York, or are you?
I'm going to talk about Frank.
You're fielding questions. No, I don't have.
Okay,
questions.
I'll go into the talk about Frank. I had talked earlier about Captain Beefheart, Charles Bukowski, and Lyndon LaRouche, emphasizing various aspects. But I left the future to talk about Frank Zappa as a comprehensive artist in the terms of the critical principles I've laid down over the last 8 months. Zappa is basically using all the senses at once, fully aware of the tactile nature of the electric environment as our ground. Now, how can a musician which deals with acoustic space offer some kind of use for the realm of music in juxtaposition to the tactile environment we're in? Well, I think Frank has solved that problem as a musician, as a specialist in that role. Now, just whistle for a second, Mike. One of your major talents, Mike. I will go into this theme with this quote from an interview. Frank, looks like some American newspaper. All right, and this was the day before the concert, February 3rd, day after James Joyce's birthday. Frank makes his comment, and you'll see why, after I read this, why I would resonate with it. Zappa says, "I am not stupid," in his defense of the First Amendment. "Give me a topic and chances are that I'll give you a line that you can use in a newspaper. I look upon it as a kind of instant theater." Now that phrase, instant theater, is very important because I've been explaining the global theater situation for a long time, right? Now he's saying that when he speaks, that's theater, instant theater. That means information is theater. That means all forms of information are theatrical. But you have to know that the word is the prime form of theater as an anti-environment to the tactility of the electric environment, which is a non-verbal, post-verbal environment. All right? So it seems that Frank is fully aware of his role in all efforts and involvement with any medium that he's surrounded with. Now, this is what he means by music with a capital M, not music with a small M. Music with a capital N is orchestrating all the various senses and their extensions, right, in an art form theatrical view. Now, if the word makes the market in a tactile environment, that word is a composite of all the various technologies that are used in a global propagandic cultural matrix, what is properly known as the multinational corporations. Now, the hardware is subservient to the software effect of that mixed media, mixed corporate media, and that is the word making the market, but not just verbal information, verbal messages. So Frank is a private entity, aware of the discarnate nature of all of us, in other words, translated into software, discarnate beings translated everywhere all the time, language and information as our being in essence in a discarnate state. As a private body, he has to provide an environment which is offers perspective to that global matrix we're talking about here. So, in the realm of music per se, which is a specialist discipline, he must use sound with a ground of tactility. In other words, the style of Frank in music is uncategorizable, according to the regular music critics in whatever field they're operating in. They always conclude that Frank is unique and not categorizable, okay? Now, that's because they're not telling the causes. That's the effectivism. They're not aware of the causes of his uncategorizableness because he's using sound as a process. And the sound is not just acoustic process, it's visual process, so that he visualizes the texture of music. Now, it's very important that you understand the use of Frank and music as a kaleidoscope of texture, because under the discarnate electric conditions we live in, we are everywhere at once, so all that can change is the texture. The scenery can never change. But within theater, which is no visual space medium, you can change the scenery as a subplot, of the visualized symbols of the acoustic symbols. So you can juxtapose both of them visually and acoustically around a larger conceptual continuity. Now, Frank talks often about his conceptual continuity, and he will let that out and discuss it as theater because the ground of it is percept, and the percept is his own personal experience. That's why Frank appears to be tyrannical in his use of musicians, but it's because he's subsuming them, and they agree to do that when they join his band. He subsumes them into his personal vision, which he knows is obsolete, and that's why he has a detached, often humorous and cynical view of not only everybody else's artistic output, but his own. But that is a stance in itself, which is an anti-environment to the fact that just performing in the media environment is theatrical.
So the musician becomes a prop.
Yeah.
On the stage.
As you know, if you've ever seen him, he often uses the puppetry metaphor.
A subsumed prop.
Subsumed, yes, and hoiked up in its proper context.
Where's that voice coming from?
Oh, just my broker. Okay. He's correcting the visual part of what we're talking about here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's right. It's a subsumed prop. And therefore, it's interesting that Zappa's little mustache has always had a Hitlerian, Adolf Hitler aspect to it. Well, that's radio as art form. Hitler was a product of the radio environment, right? So sound and music reached their peak as an international language under the radio environment. You know, the popularity of jazz as an international language. And then the humorous attempts by the WASP white culture to subsume the black international language within the culture of literacy and industrial bureaucracy, which was called the Great Society and the Civil Rights and all that. That's why civil rights is something that the blacks have achieved, but they feel there are larger issues that they're involved in now, which is like economic democracy, which is a problem dealing with the real nature of the corporate mixed media. The civil rights was just a red herring and a transient phase. There are bigger problems to deal with now. So the radio environment, you think of Zappa as absolutely free, where he says, kill ugly radio. Now, that is not a personal point of view. That is tactility, the effect of television talking about radio. And so Zappa, when he's operating in the musical world, has to put on the prime disservice aspect of it, image-wise, via Hitler-like tyranny and the Hitler mustache, right? But also there's the comic aspect, comic variations that Zappa works on, which is a Marx Brother spin-off. So you see that the real job of Frank is not entirely his musical output. He involves all the media, so that's why he's always teasing with running for president or teasing with political issues and making personal stands. All that is largely theatrical and involved with the basic precept that no matter what you do, you are reduced and inflated at the same time to information itself. You are information and filtered through all the media. Nodding away, Mike?
No, not yet.
No. No, I mean not as asleep, but you are nodding in agreement. Acknowledge. You hear me.
I miss you, Bob.
Now, say, repeat a couple of words I said just to see, I mean, you know, it's quite verbal what I said. Now, what would be a point to make to reevaluate what I just said, or what would be something to bring the images and words I've just uttered into a concrete image for Frank? Take something I just said and...
What are you asking for, a summary of what you've just said? Or?
Well, something you think that I touched on that should be now returned to. The hint is, he looks upon us...
Instant theater?
Yeah, he looks upon the interviews in journalism as a kind of instant theater. Now, that actually comes into me. Obviously, my role here is instant theater in the sense that Bob responds immediately in verbal. Now...
You know, what can be more instant than radio? I mean, with print journalism, it's not as spontaneous. I mean, the interview at the time, perhaps, is spontaneous, but it eventually has to then go through the process of being, you know, put into the computer.
Yeah, well,
there's a lot of difference there between the...
Well, Frank is on the radio and television interviews all the time. He's talking about a journalist, in this case, a newspaper journalist, but he's...
That's just that example.
Yeah, he's available. He regards answers to their questions as an economic support to their need for content. But it's theatrical. The content, the information is obsolete, including the music he makes. Now, when you see him in concert, what's amazing is that he just surfs along with an incredible journalistic style of music with quotes from all the other styles of music in various forms and classifications of the music industry. And on top of that is this constant... monstrous, monster maggot, and monster magnet style of enveloping the listener, the audience, in a nonstop barrage. And it has a mechanical aspect because he doesn't stop between songs, right? He wouldn't even stop for intermission if given a chance. I mean, most of the theaters demand him to stop so he can sell some stuff. But one of the key aspects of this concert, and a result of our conference, was the political nature of moving me into the Secret Council of 10 in the upcoming election. Now, he stopped his concert every night to urge the people to go out and register to vote. So you see, he's taking on the political democracy element as a art form and as a part of his theater, which is not just music. It includes all the institutions. Now, let's go to the... It's time, right? Time to go to some tape?
Yeah.
Time to go to some Ivan Fang tape, but I will end off with this teaser. Frank, as you know, I got him in touch with Mae Russell. Now, he has an epic new piece, a new work, called The Republican Retrospective, where he discusses the Republican Party over the last 20 years. Now, the opening line in it, in this epic, is 1 plus 1 equals 11, 2 plus 2 equals 22. Now, you know I've talked about the number of 22 and hinted at it. Well, that is the opening line of his epic, and you can, I will go into after why we had to talk and what was discussed.
And remain with us for the next 30 minutes. Bob?
The message is now part of and registered in your subconscious mind.
Why don't we just say it's the Subgenius Revival, folks. December 6th, Club Dollar, Jane or Harvard Place. And
okay, we stop.
Mike, it's like...
you guys are laughing, but it's more... he just sounds like a regular DJ there.
He's really losing it, Mike.
No, I don't think so. I think you two guys are just myth. You're the only two guys who think you should do... Bob should do more talking.
Yeah, but he's...
Everyone else here is enjoying the tape.
He's citing the sources, for God's sakes. I mean, well, that's...
We're not afraid to buck a trend, Mike.
Of course not.
In the name of being right, we don't care.
I mean, you know, citing sources, I mean, it's like you, Mike, reading labels, you know, your expertise. It's just on a Subgenius tape. I mean,
it's like he gave up trying to do Bob Dobbs. Now he just says, I'm doing Spike Jones, now I'm doing this. It's like, you're doing that.
He collapsed. Okay, let's ignore that.
Okay, we waste too much time criticizing. I mean, the tapes are, to me, an integral part of this show. And, you know, we're still going to play the tapes. That's the whole part of it.
Well, let's bring back my old tapes, the ones from 82 and that, where there's archival
qualities.
I wanted to ask an important question about the Zappa concert. Right. The pre-show build-up was to the effect that it was going to be a benefit to the dishonor of Jim and Tammy Baker. Is that how it worked? Does Steve Allen was supposed to be there?
No, that's the Fundamentalist Anonymous benefit he went to before the concert. It's nothing to do with his concert.
Oh, that was something separate. Huh?
Yeah, his tour is called Broadway the Hard Way. And Beacon Theater, where he played, is on Broadway. And... and so maybe you'd like to come up with another question, more relevant? No, okay, maybe it's going. All right, Mike.
Bob.
Why did I meet with Frank? Well, Frank is necessary to give Bob acoustic release. And he acknowledges that. And also the fact that he is moving across the country in this key year, not just in the United States, but in the Council of Ten, problems will lurk around him constantly, and he has to be on guard for it, and I had to give him some clues on how to protect himself, because I want him to stay alive so that I can get that acoustic release of my off hours, you know, and he can do it. And the third night, we had two beautiful shows, Thursday and Friday, but halfway through the second set, near the end of the show, some pink dumped beer into his mixing console.
You're kidding.
Yeah, blowing out $35,000 to $80,000 machinery. And so luckily they were able to recycle the sound through their mobile truck out back, and so we could finish the concert, but it was a bit diminished because you couldn't use all the monitors. But that kind of sabotage is going to maybe happening to Frank, and he's fully aware of it. I'm just glad it didn't happen until near the end of the three-night thing, because Frank has a repertoire of over 100 songs, so each concert is only one-third if you get a three-night shot in your city.
Mm-hmm.
It's only one-third of the real big concert, the whole perceptual and conceptual continuity package. But I understand he's not coming to Toronto. So far, he's doing a northeastern tour, and the closest he's coming to is Buffalo. Maybe Toronto later.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this may seem strange for Bob to talk so much about someone else, but since we live in a tactile environment, unless you're Bob, visual space is rather anemic. For anti-environmental release, you need acoustic space. Right? Acoustic is a subdivision of tactile space being all the senses interrelating constantly, right? I think Frank's intensity of his concerts always confronts you with the percept of, here is the greatest thing since Beethoven, and yet there are raving pinks screaming their heads off at the concert. This is quite upsetting, because other pinks...
Probably a younger crowd.
All ages. I mean, yeah. I saw professors leaping about and acting 25 years old, and they were in their 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And yet you had other meatballs and pinks and alcoholics and winos and chartered accountants and presidential candidates in the audience leaping about, people in wheelchairs jumping out of the wheelchair. It's quite an environmental effect he creates, but I think it's because he can mime the tactile ground and just... bypass all categories and just work on the big note. Now, what is the big note? Or what is his first question on his first album? Who are the Brain Police? Well, obviously I am the brain police and the big note, but it needs to be translated for pinks and subgeniuses through the electric environment. Hence the value of that amplified music.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, you sit there as Bob and you watch the show. You watch three performances by Frank Zappa.
Yep.
And you observe around you the performance in
yes,
the interplay
theater.
Of the pinks.
Yeah.
But I mean, does Bob feel anything on a very personal level about the shows? You come away feeling...
Oh, yes. I regard them as a direct letter from Frank to me, and he indicated by starting off his Republican epic, which has a style similar to a May Brussel hour, naming names and talking about the connections around the Republican Party and the White House over the last 20 years. And when he starts off that with 1 plus 1 equals 11 and 2 plus 2 equals 22... He's talking directly to me because I'm the only one who knows the significance of those letters.
Mm-hmm.
A. Sort of a nickname for my church here, which I'm only the member of. And, no, how do you say that? I am the only member of, right?
Right.
The nickname for that is Club 22. But I wouldn't say that there's only one member of Club 22.
There are a lot of devotees.
There's a lot of members of Club 22, but... The nickname for my church is Club 22, but the church I represent has only me as a member. All right? So when he's talking about 1 plus 1 equals 11, which is half of 22, and then follows up with the 22, that is the appropriate thing because 22 is the symbol for the Rockefellers. That is their economic secret code, and it was hijacked by number 18, which is the Rothschilds. And 22 has appeared in the headlines constantly over the last 5-7 years as a number for striking an iconic resonance with the public. But that's because its figure, the ground, is no longer 22. The figure is 22. All right? And so I think I would say, and that's enough to say on that. Doesn't mean I'm finished talking today, but I don't think I should say any more about the 22.
You should cut out of here, actually.
But see, I don't have to tell Frank these things. I just know he's off there picking it up through the subgenius resonance, and I go to a concert to see how close he's been to me. And he does it every time. And then the acoustic release, I mean, I'm jumping around like the pinks, too. I'm consuming. Bob can be a consumer. And so...
Was Mrs. Bob consuming?
Oh, yeah, Connie was there. And, of course, she had a very good involvement with Frank's wife and did some important work there in a medicinal aspect.
Of course.
Not that there was anything wrong with Gail, but medical problems were dealt with as an environment. And so I would say that even though I was there as a consumer, the producer aspect for me was the direct advice I had to give Frank for the rest of this tour. He was a little disturbed about the what happened to his mixing console, but fully able to handle it within 24 hours. Unfortunately, Washington, which was his next date, I did not have a concert Monday night, but was today, Wednesday. So last night and Wednesday, they had concerts, I assume. Nothing's been in the news about it. So it was a good holiday for Bob. Very rare. I haven't had a holiday since the last Zappa concert, which was in 1984. So there was a lot of release happening for me. And I even got a clogged nose as an effect.
Good, good.
Yeah,
it was good to have you back and sniffling.
The nasal drone mechanism. Remember that on Uncle Meat? Nasal drone, one of the symptoms of Rublin of Jets. That's for people who understand.
No, I don't. I'm too young.
The details of Frank's early work.
Okay.
All right, let's eat.
You look too young, Mike.
Yeah. Thanks. Okay.
I think that's it.
That's it for today. I'm sorry. I feel dissatisfied today. I don't know why. I'm just...
Well, it's because of the saying state, but I think we're going to have to alternate the old tape with the new tapes. I don't think we can handle having staying every week.
All right. I agree. Let's bring in an old tape.
Yeah, an archival one.
We'll let it roll.
Okay. All right.
Thanks, Bob.
Praise Bob.
You bet.
Hello and welcome to Entertainment Listings for Wednesday, February the 10th.